Hi, Hank.
Here we are.
Hi, we're in this continuation of the exploration of Mather musics. I just quite at length explained why I am looking for a relationship between the organs in the body and the orchestra in music. And I'd like to ask you to take over the story from here and explore how in your mind the orchestra in music combines frequencies, combines feelings, combines involvement, and maybe can be of use to understand how we can model health in our being.
Yeah, I'll give it a try, Otto. It's a difficult question because there is not much knowledge about it in Western society, and also not in musical anthropology. They did not do it in this medical way or attunement way. So they describe it in a different way. So what I tell you now is based on my fantasy, pure on my fantasy. So because the only thing that I can grasp and can say something serious about, that's when it comes to specific tones and scales, etc., etc. So it's more in the music, so in the phenomenon of music, than in the instruments. But that's just my way, because I approach it from the singing side, and they never tried it instrumentally. Even Pythagoras did not describe on his monochord these kinds of phenomena, although instruments referring to certain body areas, as we described in our prior conversation 14 days ago. Nevertheless, there will be a connection on this quadrivium level, or just on a musical level. So I just give it a try. So enough excuses, I don't give it a try. So for instance, when we look at the shape, and I simply go draw from the shape, because I know that organs, they have a shape signature. Every organ has its archetypical shape signature, and it's very sensitive for this shapes produced, sound shapes, not soundscape, but sound shape produced by this instrument. So, and it's also sensitive in this audio range, or you call it the phono range. And so it takes up its phono phenomenons. But there's also, next to this phono phenomenon, it's recorded by our electromagnetic system, very sensitive, and then immediately it starts to change already. And that's why it's so hard to substantial research, because there are so many interfaces that normal causal hardcore science can't do the research, because too many parameters in this paradigm. So going back to this shape of the instruments, so in the shape of the instruments you can see the flow shape, or the archetype typical shape of the organ in the body. And you play this on different level, different tones, so it reaches on a different level. And so within one octave you can do anything according Indian music, but also according my way of doing it. But if you draw from this, for instance, to a piece of Wagner, let's say the Walküre, there are already so many or the Fliegende Holländer, the Flying Dutchman, then there are already so many strings. They're also playing strings in the orchestra, but there are also many strings attached to all those feelings that we have. So it's magnificent how he wrote it together in this immense complexity. And it's also fascinating that you can listen for it for 4 or 5 hours and still not be distracted. So that this is very long, longitudinal wave, length, a biorhythm that, for instance, a piece of Wagner taps into. So it's even more than the orchestra, because even the breaks of the orchestra are included in this. So, but then to go back again to, let's say, the strings, as you said it, you play it, the strings most of the time next to your heart with a stick or just plucking with your fingers. There is some organs are more sensitive to this. For instance, we know that the harp is very much related, the best related instrument for the heart. But if you play on a ukulele, that small four-string ukulele, it does it even better. It's very, ukulele is a very tiny guitar with four strings, and you can play anything on it. It's very simple, and everybody is touched by it. And so I call this also an instrument of the heart. And going from this point of view, you could say, but very simple now, you could say that when you play on an instrument like this, you will rebalance your heart area. So depression will get, you will get rid easily of depression, and your it's also possible that your veins will act better, so you will not have your heart attack when you're around 50. But most of the time when you play musical instruments, you're not so very sensitive to heart attacks. So that's also a signal. So if you are afraid of getting a heart attack or getting problems when you're 60, just play a musical instrument. It doesn't matter what kind of instrument, just play it, and you will lower your blood pressure, you will rebalance your concentra potential in the blood. And as our friend, who did this blood research in David, we've seen the guy in Hilversum with Emoto.
David Schweitzer.
No. Yeah, Schweitzer, yes, indeed. Yeah, David Schweitzer. He had also done quite a distinct research on singing the Ohm. And he showed in his picture that by just singing 3 minutes a day the Om mantra, your zeta potential was balanced, so you didn't have to be afraid of getting a cerebrovascular accident and that kind of stuff. And then also the tones seem not to be very important, just by singing so-called harmonic overtones that are included in singing is enough to do it. And I think that many of just simple singing one tone for 3 minutes a day will keep the doctor away, to keep it simple. That's what I stated earlier in earlier days. So just sing 3 minutes a day, a vowel, 3 minutes of vowel a day will keep the doctor away. And so I think it's really that simple, but we are now looking for a more complex relation in the orchestra with the instruments. And there's the only instrument we have inside of us is the voice. And if you look at the phylogenetic building, the only other animal that has vocal cords, that's the whale and the human beings. So it's very strange that in all of creation there is just a mammal called humans that have these vocal cords. And you have this whale that's already so old, and it's set according Lamarck and his friends, that the whale is older than human being, just as the dinosaur will be older, but a dinosaur didn't have vocal cords as far as they could see, but we don't know exactly. Maybe he could speak, huh? Because we didn't find cartilage is not very well preserved in nature. We didn't find a vein-like, so that it's good well-reserved dino to see. Oh yes, indeed, he has vocal cords. He had a monkey vocal cord, so that's the most inside instrument we have. And so I think that the voice is on this, when you have this lazy eight, this infinity figure, the lemniscate of the Euler Möbius loop, I think that the voice is right in the middle of this Möbius loop, exactly in the middle. And my colleague Donna Eden from America says, yeah, it's the holy grail of medicine. Can you help me out on this? And so we tried some things, and we still need to go quite a few steps more to really get this thing established on a deeper level. And you see that when you go with an orchestra is not complete without voices. And the most refined pieces you get, and also when you go to Wagner, they sing. Without singing, the instrument or the orchestra is a little bit void. It's not completely fulfilled with everything, because we don't have an organ. The instruments, they using their voice. And what I learned, professional instrumentalists, to use their voice while they sing along silently and make the vowel with their mouth while they play, and it produces quite a good vibe, or even much better vibe, because the intention is so more in a carrier way that the musician is making. So we're talking about different phenomena than just the shape of the instrument. But if you put it on the carrier wave that's built in the mouth in a certain shape of overtones, so you can test it on overtones in your mouth, and then the instrumentalist is playing with this mouth shape, keeping the space alive. So the instrumentalist is creating with his body the space, and within this space he creates with his body and his vocal tract, and his tongue, his mouth, he creates the whole performance. And if we do that all together, we can do much healing just by just doing so, because we're getting on a very high quality of life. And it's such a high quality that miracles will happen by itself, because the environment the environment is one of high energy and with high possibilities and high likelihood that something that must come to change will change in a nice and transformative way, not by force. It's very powerful, but it's done not by force, and actually either also not so by choice. It's just being the choice of the customer or the listener to surrender to it or not to surrender to it, to connect up with it or not to connect up with it. That's the question, as we stated earlier in this wisdom of Shakespeare. Getting back to the instruments again, there is a relation between the cavities that are in the instruments and the cavity of the mouth and the voice and the throat. And we call it also the voice hole in Dutch, stemgat. So there's all the time this relation with the human playing on it and the organ. So without, so you could also, we could make a pianola, or we could make a viola, an André Rieu pianola, headed with the string, stringstock, nee, the strijkstock, with Geigenbogen. Now
the bow of the violin.
So you could also let a computer play this violin in this way, but they tried it, of course, many times. But the computer and the robots can't do this, because they cannot respond to the emotions and the feelings of the audience. So it's always this quality of the interface that's finally showing what really happens. So it's always this interaction of these two human beings or more human beings together. What will be the outcome and how much they can surrender to you. And then looking at the instruments, and especially where the sound holes or the voice holes are made in the instrument, you can say, okay, it's over there. So where exactly is the sound hole of the violin? And if you look at the violin and the basso continuo, you see that they have these F shapes down below. So you see that it's already based, and you see also that this corset like woman like corset view this instrument have. So this wasp waist. I think you say it's something like that. When you hear these kinds of instruments, you automatically tend to give a little bit more push on your belly muscles and on your six pack and on your back muscles to create a tiny waist by just listening to it. And you see that the muscles will contract a little bit tight, because the shape of the instrument decides that for you, or how do you say it? Empowers you to do so. It's more positive. It's empowerment. It's not enforcing, but it's and it reinforces your better posture. So the instrument is saying, okay, this is your ideal posture for you to stay alive, to keep yourself alive. So we play on this instrument to keep you in good shape and to keep you free from too much information that you can't deal with, and to get the information out of your system that pollutes you. And that's very nice to see on a cello, a violin, or a viola da gamba. And it's so nice to see this shape back to it. And when you look to a harp shape, then you see already the whole spine back in the whole thing. So you have all this 24 spines, and if you don't take the coccyx with it. And then we have already, when we take the coccyx with it, we have already three octaves. That's not even on the harp. Only the concert harp has this wide range. So you see that it's all there, and you see when you have this huge harp, it's also completely the body length. So you see in the shape, the shape signature of the instrument is also telling you something that works in that way. So yes, indeed, the harp is an instrument for the heart, but also for the spine. and some things around it. And you see the composers also using this, but the funny thing is there are not many composers who dare to write about it because they didn't like to end, that they like to end up for an audience, but not at the burning stake. So we know, for instance, from the secret things of Johann Sebastian Bach, that he was completely involved in the business of Christian Rosenkranz, yeah, what? Or Rosenkranz, something like that. I don't know if I read it in English or German. And that was also a mystical group that was into white magic, into some blue and red magic, but also very interested in healing processes. And what you see in Bach's composition, so that was actually a very kammer-like, living room-like orchestra, because they just had two clavichords or one clavichord and a viola da gamba and a violin and a basso. And I just saw people playing this, the suites, and then later on they made it bigger and bigger with when you want to do things like this for the king, you put some more, and then they put some more wood instrument in it and a little bit more block flutes, etc. They were very intrigued by it, especially in the Baroque. I must say that what I found in the Baroque, that they were very, very, very skillful, and somewhere ended up during the biggest repression of it. And then later on, after Mozart, that knowledge disappeared somewhere, and we didn't know where it went to. A long time I thought that it ended up in the library of the Vatican, but nowadays I still doubt about it, because when they had this knowledge, when they would have this knowledge, they would act differently. And also what I know from other people who spoke with people from the Vatican about this, and with the Muslim Vatican and with the Jewish Vatican in Jerusalem and in Cairo, and he simply told me that the knowledge was not there. They don't have the knowledge. It might be in their books, but they don't understand it anymore. And he was going to, he told them the deeper meaning of it, and then they were flabbergasted that the guy knew this. And I had similar experiences with people, leading people in the field of the lodges, the Freemason lodges. And I was showing them what I did, and they were completely astonished, because it was much further than they ever did in their ceremonies and in their secret things. And saying, "But you can't do this because we do." And they saw all kinds of danger, and of course there is danger, that's true. But nevertheless, by doing so, and that they knew the danger, but they did not know what it was about. I knew that they didn't know it, and that they had somebody told them, yes, you better beware when people do this kind of thing. That's very very spooky. And for me, that were just normal things, because I've learned this from experience. And they were shocked that I knew their rituals. So there is this. This religions, or I don't know if it's the right word for it, but let's call it for this moment religion. They have their fixed ideas about what is right and what is wrong, and you should do this and you should do that. And from this kind of religious point, some religions say, you don't use a drum, and other religions say, yeah, but don't use don't use a harpsichord, or don't do this, or don't do that. And for me, I don't believe in that kind of shit. Also, not don't use this kind of voice because such and so. Yes, in some ways, you should not do this, of course. But going back to the orchestra, it's so stupid to say, oh, never use a harp, because then people get they fall in love and they fall in love with somebody else than their own wife. So you're playing with these kind of forces, and or don't play too much drum because people get sexually stimulated and they're not responsible anymore for what they're doing. They don't have a free choice anymore. With playing drum, you discharge them and you give let's say Satan the possibility of taking over and. But that's and in fact that's what could happen. It's not nonsense. I must be clear about it. That's not nonsense. But there's also too much fear around it, and too little knowledge. So they die from fear, not from too much knowledge. And I go back to the orchestra. To have some more instrument talk over. Then we have the flutes and different kinds of flutes. So, and most of the time they are on the upper part, above the harp. So they are very much, they influence very much the head, the throats, and also the heart. But nevertheless, most of the time they don't go deeper than this. And we have all kinds of flute. We have the choir flute, the choir flute. The wind is going on 90 degrees of your body, and the other flutes, they go straight on, and that's also a reason for it. And you have in the Arabic, you have all this, the snake flute and all those other flutes. But if you then go back to the classical orchestra, you have this fagot so the hobo is the right one with this very pure tone with almost no overtone, and so that's a very pure one, and that's also very strong into the heart if it's well played. Then we have the fagot. It's a long one, a long wooden stick with a copper rod to it. You blow this copper rod on a reed. And that's especially the bass fagotto. They go very deep in the sacral area and in the coccyx. And then we have the copper, like the saxophone. That's very much the lower saxophone. The bass is really going very deep under your feet. And then we have the lower the tenor saxophone that we most know from Kenny Dolfer. And that's really playing very much on your sex chakra level. But even the part that's getting out of your the length of the exact height where it is, it's right in front of your genitals. So of course that's very influential. And also the tones that are blown are very much related to the sexophone, as they also call it. But I don't have much sexy feelings with the saxophone, strangely enough, because if one would should have one, but maybe that's not my instrument that I prioritize, but it's just an intimate detail. But there are lots of people who are very strongly responding to this sexual tendency of the saxophone. So that's also funny. So that we respond to it on a different way. So you have your own feeling of appreciation or surrender to it, and maybe I don't surrender enough to this beautiful saxophone music. I have saxophone music that I like very much, but that's from the Morales, from John Gabaret. So there are always to find a composition that are very distinctive and beautiful, even when you don't like the instrument. It's just a matter of searching for the right composition and the right artist to play it for you. Then another instrument, which one should I take? the Lotto is the most of the wooden we have. So let's go to the manuals, the keyboards. There is not much synthesized keyboard used in orchestra nowadays, but sometimes they use samplers because it's simpler to use a sampler than to have this whole instrument taken with you on the back of your shoulders. The point is samplers and synthesizers, they have one problem, they cannot easily go in resonance with the audience. So the only resonance that's possible is through the artist himself, but the instrument itself is not very resonant to the audience. But you can, there are no strings in it to keep it very simple. So that's why they prefer in a classical orchestra to still use the haka board. So then you have this strings of a piano played, and it gives a more gypsy like feeling, very vivid, very alive, in contrary to the music that's really played on a piano. It's not very vivid, it's not very alive, it's beautiful, but it's very polished. And if you use the hakkabord, or I don't know how it's called, the zither, yeah, but then a very large zither, yeah? So we have this piano-shaped zither.
Cimbalo.
Cimbalo. And you get this spirit of aliveness, and then also when this play on this very vivid way, this gypsy vivid way on the violin, also when you have gypsies playing classical music, it has this vibrancy of really alive, when they're very good gypsy players, of course. We have also poor players, but there are also very very skilled gypsy violin players, and also a cembalo player. So it's really magnificent. And so you see already the music that they play, and the way they have this small orchestra. Gypsy orchestra is most of the time not much more than 10 people. And you see that they can do even create much more vividness than the London Philharmonics or the Concertgebouw Orchestra. And they are much better skilled at the Concertgebouw Orchestra and the London Symphony Orchestra than these gypsies. But these gypsies, they play better. And that's also so great, because they make mistakes, they make much more mistakes, but their music is alive, and they play with this a resonant feeling, and when you have this professional orchestra, you feel that there are not so much. So when I go to Philip van Herrewegen, also very good conductor, but it doesn't have this aliveness. It doesn't have this aliveness, and that's really a pity. And then Mr. Don't Worry, Be Happy comes along to create some more aliveness in the orchestra, because if you go along this way, then finally people will stay away, because it's too little life force in the orchestra. So you see that this life force, that at least in my way of looking at this, is so important to get the effects, really the effects of the instrument. And it's the life force that's more important than the quality of the player. Of course, when the player is good enough, the life force will also disappear. It's that simple. So you need to have a certain balance between it. And also when this little balance is there, then people empower themselves to get it more and more alive, or to get it more and more into B flat or any other scale, and so to really get this feeling. And for instance, when you take music of Wagner with these very long lines, yeah, this feeling should be okay, there should be some resonance in it. But if you listen to how they played Wagner before the Second World War and after, and nowadays, I think that they play these days much better than they did then. Because there is more, or as Geert Makkelijk stated it so nice, you can hear in the music that there's no father that is hurted by the war on the ethic of the instrumentalist. So you can hear that there's tremendous wounds that were slain by the Second World War in all musicians and the audience, of course, that disappeared through the years. And when I listen sometimes to these 1950 recorders, I get I get so upset from all this pain I hear over there, and I can hardly imagine that it could have been healing for the people on that specific moment. But of course, it was very healing because they were all there. They had their crazy father that was traumatized by the war, and a mother that had to keep up appearances. And then go along with life like nothing has happened ever. Oh, concentration camp, oh, never heard of it, and all that kind of crap. Our Jewish concentration camp, no, just so it's fascinating to hear this recordings, and it actually creates a field of the wounds that were then. And so it's also so fascinating that we have this, that we have these recordings still, and that you can feel the illness that was there in the orchestra, and so that goes much further than just this simple instrument. But I think this instrument adapts to the person that's playing on it. And together they create this syncopation. It's also funny that some of the music is very poor in syncopation, and that's exactly how things worked in those days. But there was a willpower intent to get it resonating, and because they had this very strong willpower of getting it resonate, it had this tremendous power, because yeah, we had a war and we had this pain, but we will get it, and that's also the willpower that you can hear in this music is also of tremendous quality. But since these days we don't use, we neglected this kind of willpower out of luxury. Yeah, we did it. We don't use our will muscles anymore so well as in the old days, and then we lose again integrity. But let's go back to the orchestra. Yeah. So in the orchestra, all those things are audible, and when I go back to a specific instrument like playing a piano, so you have this piano playing, but then you have already a piano concerto. So the orchestra need to be very much on the background so that the piano is audible above the instrument. So when the piano is playing, you don't start rumbling with your trombones, getting all the chakras of your audience right. Right. And there is not much trombone music in a little trumpet, but most of the time not, because it's too metal, and it doesn't sound very well together in one concerto. So the composers were aware of this phenomenon, so they didn't outright. But then in later modern classical music, developed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you had this kind of composition that they especially used this kind of things, but then they called it already quite soon free jazz, because it was out of order. It was something dysfunctional. And I don't want to say that FTS is dysfunctional, but in some way it is dysfunctional. And but it's functional in a way to get dysfunctional things acknowledged. And the acknowledgement is another state of mind in the person itself. It's not specific music, but it's the range of tones, the instrument. They are not very sounding very well together. You just play them and see what happens. And I've done a lot of this kind in the punk times. I played a lot of these kinds of instruments with a synthesizer and trombone and trumpet, those saxophone and drums, etc. And we were making all kinds of crazy music, and people paid for it. And I was astonished because I had a traditional upbringing, so that people even would pay for that. I could not imagine that they paid for they're making this kind of stupid music. Okay, I was brilliant, but it was still stupid brilliant. I got even paid for this. And but that was for the 80s, so I didn't have this self-esteem to see what I was really doing. I was insecure about it. But, and then you see the whole thing coming back to this orchestra, playing with these musical instruments. So the orchestras, they were also starting to, they make minimal music, and they listen to just one instrument playing one tone. And John Cage did already his 433 silence, or 457, or something like that, his composition. So there were already a lot of strange things in music, but that was not very, or just little acknowledged by, especially also by musicians, because they hated most of the time the stuff to play, because they just like to play this more harmonical stuff. And for me in those days, that I had to say that it was yucky. And because we were doing free jazz and musical theater, and giving performances with it. And it was a little bit like, to get an idea, a little bit like Nina Hagen and the movement like Pina Bausch, a bit in that area. So you were looking for just movements, and to alienate the movements from everyday life, and also to alienate the music and musical instruments from everyday life as we were used to it. And so just to get people out of this, out of their musical box thinking. And so it was intriguing also to use the instrument on a different way. So you just start to play with your bow on the guitar. And you had the electric guitar and see what happened, because they never heard it. And you can just, it's easy. You take your violin bow and you play on the guitar, or on an electrical guitar, and see what happens. And just beating the drumsticks on the strings of your guitar, and then you get a little bit like the cimbalo. So these were about the things we did in those days. And we also saw that the orchestra went in that direction of playing with it and doing things with this. To summarize it a little bit, so every instrument has a certain signature, where the air is going through and the sound is produced, when you have this a shape of the vortex, so you see within the saxophone and in the trumpet and in the flute, and with the drums you see this whole membrane. So just going up and down, and with the membrane of the drum. But with the more vortex-like, then it's spiraling out, and you see also the spiral in this kind of instrument. And all the spiraling instruments, they are very sensitive to the chakras. And the lower the drum is only effective on the lower two, or a little bit solar plexus also. So all those instruments have these kind of qualities, And then we have the string instruments, and of course the organ itself. And the organ is the old copy of is the old synthesizer, and it's actually the ideal of how God created man of all these tones. And in the old days, it was also forbidden to have an organ in the church because that was of Satan, because you could create by itself, and this music you could do it yourself, and you didn't let God to do it anymore. And the kind of beliefs were there around. So then we have the keyboard instruments doing this whole spectrum from head to toe, but even above the head and even under the toe, so the underground, so you play the whole Merkaba and even beyond this, because you can do this whole audible range, and that's going far beyond, and also the inaudible range you can play with these kinds of organs. And and the inaudible range you can still feel, and you cannot hear it anymore with your ears, but you can feel it with your screen.
Hank, I would like to ask, for a reason of timing, to mm-hmm. continue this the next time, because you said that yeah. around this time you needed to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
You brought many ideas together. I'd very much like to explore more of this, of how we can correlate the organs to the bodies. Mm-hmm. Also, we have implicitly talked about the healing effect of the organs and the body, so we might talk about the effect of music and healing as well next time. So either we talk more about the relationship between the orchestra and the organs, or we talk about the effect of the music of the orchestra on healing next time, or the time after, that we take up those two topics for a sequel.
Maybe when I come along and find more detailed information of what is written, but there's just a little, very, very little what's written about it.
Yeah, so it would be wonderful if you could look up some of that, of what you've already looked at and can find.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit cautious that you said that you needed to yeah. go elsewhere at this time.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So from that perspective, I suggest that we round off the recording for now. Is there something that you would like to say in conclusion for the story of today about the relationship between the orchestra and the body organs?
Yeah, so the conclusion is that to give more details, I need to find more information on research, what is done. And the only research that I stumble upon now is on tonal research. And that's of course very understandable, because that's the only thing you can measure in a causal way. So I think I have to find other mystical ways of approaching music, but that's not so easy to find on the internet also.
So let's see if we can do that for next time.
Yeah.
And let's take that as a starting point. What can you find about that relationship between organs and the orchestra? Either we fill that in from there, or yeah. we take it in on the effect of it, which is the effect of musical healing, vibrational healing, miraculous healing, and the deeper level of consciousness as lived by the living cells in our body. For now, yeah. thank you very much for participating, contributing again to Mathe Musics. And in this case, let me just summarize what you've brought up. You've been talking about the way the different instruments with their different modes of involvement have been used by various composers, such as Wagner, but also as a kind of ritualistic often method for having individuals play sheet music together. But you've contrasted to the gypsies, who also play music together straight from feeling, and that we can actually strongly feel the difference between the two. You've also shown that by combining instruments in an orchestra, a larger understanding of music and the effect of music has come to be. But that much of that knowledge has seemingly disappeared after Mozart, even though the effect of it still exists. So that is what we will continue to explore in the continued sessions. And for now, Henk, thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Till next time.
See you.
Thank you.
Bye.